For last some classes, we have been studying the most important and consequently most well-known chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 15th chapter, which is recited by many every day. This 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is described by great scholars as the essence not only of Bhagavad Gita but also the essence of the whole Vedanta encapsulated in it. Of course, that doesn't mean that what we have been studying till 14th chapter is not necessary. I alluded to that question last time, that, well, Swami, then why were you wasting our times? And we just want the essence. So you should have taken just 15 chapter here, let the other things remain. Friends, the essence is important, but to understand it better, we need the background too. And now, after the 14 chapters have been read, the 15th chapter makes all the meaning more clear to us. And we saw that the whole universe of names and forms is described here as originated and established in truth. It has been described as a tree, and the root of it is the truth above. So this is kind of an inverted tree image. This comes in the Kathopanishad also, and in Kathopanishad the commentator, great Shankara, has written an elaborate commentary on it. Here he has not given a big commentary, but that very commentary is understood to be in place here too, because the imagery is exactly same, the idea is exactly same. So he describes that how this whole tree of the universe is really the expansion or emanation of that root. The word emanation was used in the Western context by Plotinus. His whole idea comes very similar in almost all aspects to the ideas in Vedanta. Plotinus was a Greek philosopher who said that this whole universe is not a creation, but an emanation, like the rays of the sun. That sun does not create them or manufacture them from something. It is a spontaneous emanation that we see. So this whole universe is emanation of that truth. And thus, it is told that look at that root. Don't get caught in the changing names and forms. In the 13th and 14th chapter, we saw this emphasis on the discernment between the changing and the unchanging, the unchanging knower and the changing known. So all these very important concepts have been explained there, that when your life is well established in the unchanging, ever-present self, then the riddle of life is resolved. Till then, it is all entanglement. And this is a message of immense practicality. It is not a theoretical understanding alone, but the practical experience. So it is told, how can one get that practical experience? This is a matter of spiritual practice. And as we put ourselves into the practice, more of and more of that truth gets evolved to in our awareness. I had told you that beautiful story, beautiful incident in my own life, that when in Meadows, I and my dad were walking, and I couldn't see in the dark. It was dark, so we could see only a little part of the whole path. So I asked my dad, how can we reach our home walking like this? Where are we going? We may get lost. And he said, no, the special feature of these footpaths in the meadows is that as you walk on them, next few feet become clearer and clearer to you. So this truth is like that. Those whose awareness is not put into that practice, whose life has not been doing this spiritual practice, for them these truths will not be accessible. So therefore Lord says that how one can understand it, it is by the practice of detachment. Asanga shastrena dridhena chetva. This world, we try to think of that this world as attempting to make it beautiful, make it comfortable, but this is not possible. It is the characteristic of world is that every little happiness that you get here is balanced by corresponding suffering. If you try to change something to make it more comfortable, you get more discomfort also. We experience this and yet think that we will be able to make this world full of all good people, full of all only truthful people. There will be no thief in this universe, no violence and so forth. But that is not possible in the very constitution of the universe. We need to get detached from it because it is unreal. Many times Vivekananda had been asked this question, what is the use of this Vedanta knowledge? So he answers, first thing he says, that suppose it doesn't have any use, does it make it less true? Does it make it less true? Suppose, take it for granted that it has absolutely no use. Does it make it any less true? It is true. Truth is the highest value. So therefore, don't think about the use as such. And then, first confirming this, that yes, it is the truth. Then, a secondary aspect is, well, it has the highest use. When you are established in truth, all the sufferings and bondages, frustrations, restlessness that we experience because of the lack of knowledge of truth, they will vanish. When the root is cut, then the branches and all the growth that also gets cut accordingly. And so, this is to be cut. This attachment is the secondary root on which this tree grows. So that needs to be cut. You cannot think that I want this from this world. Have anything apart from self, whenever we look for any consolation from something outside, then that thing becomes our bondage. It is that becomes, that too becomes the matrix of the whole universe to follow. I can renounce everything except my wife or my husband or my so and so or my house or my pet ideas. They also form a big source of attachment. We get caught up in our pet ideas, and then they are like our brain children. And brain children also strongly bind us. Just as the earthly children bind a person, a brain child also has at least equal, if not more, potential to bind us. So we have to develop a detachment for them. If you get attached to one thing, even one thing, apart from the true self, then everything else will come out of this too. You know, in your computer, you can create a whole universe. And what is the basis of that? How it gets created? Only two. Only two. Where there is one, there is no creation. Have second, have two. And then you get all these logic gates, yes and no. You convert them in the electronic format, current passes and current doesn't pass. And thus, from that you can create the whole universe. So that is how, get something else, and then you have no escape from this whole changing gamut of this perception of duality that is going to follow automatically. Therefore, relentlessly, let us use the word mercilessly, cut asunder all attachment. And Lord said that you have to hold this weapon of detachment very firmly, because it is human mind. You get the idea that, well, that person is so caring and loving to me. How can I be detached to that person? No, that's not fair. I have nothing for myself, but for the sake of that person, I must have that attachment, that much attachment. Friends, this is the ignorance trying hard to enter. This is what is called Maya. One of our Swamis who used to teach us, he said that these are the attacks of Maya. They look very sweet. They look very inviting, very alluring, and you therefore harbor it like a Trojan horse, you know. So my friend Frank is here. We were talking about the Trojan horse. That it comes into us, we take it in, and then, well, they vanquish us. All our spiritual noble ideas, they then get vanquished, they get defeated completely because of these things. And so we have to be very careful, very cautious, that let us not harbor in it. Let us not think of those things. It is very important that we take care of our spiritual life, as the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, also Ishavasya Upanishad, indicated so beautifully. Of course, this analogy that I will be quoting is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad, that look how precious things are taken care of by people. In olden days, preserving fire was very important. Now you have the matchbox And even if it burns, the fire is extinguished, you can easily light another one. But those days it used to be a very laborious task to rub two pieces of a particular wood against each other, and after that luckily you will get some fire. Everybody couldn't, there used to be some very especially skilled people to light the fire by rubbing those pieces of wood together. So when you light it, then it needs to be preserved, so that whenever you need, you can then take another something, lamp or candle or little oil to burn it. So in fact there used to be special houses, special families in the division of labor, and some families were given this responsibility that they will always keep fire burning in their homes, so that if somebody somewhere in the village has no fire, they will be able to provide a spark. So fire was being protected with great care. Like that, then also another, that how a caring woman, she takes precautions to protect the fetus, that well, the baby is going to be born, and that baby needs all the care, and so whatever her other instincts may be, she keeps them aside so that the baby would get protected. She may like to eat many things, but if she is told, well, that may cause harm to the coming baby, she shuns it, because preserving the baby is very important. She might be tempted to do many other things, but she looks at that baby in the womb and says, no, no, now I can't do it because the baby is so precious. Similarly, this spiritual aspiration, friends, is very precious, very precious. And so we must be very careful that our attachments may destroy it. So therefore, make it clear, let us make it clear to ourselves that no, I will not harbor attachment to anything in the world. I will strive to get rid of it. Then this spiritual aspiration will be protected and will be nurtured. Otherwise, the harsh winds of attachment could kill it. And this spiritual aspiration is therefore protected through the practice of detachment. And then the secondary means were told how to protect that attachment, as we saw that nirmana moha chita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvair vimukta sukha dukha sanjnye gachantya mudha padamavyayam tat. This is the fifth verse. We saw it briefly last time, but because of its immense importance, we'll ponder it a little bit today too. Free from pride and delusion, overcoming the evil of attachment, ever devoted to spiritual pursuits, rid of desires and dual throng named pleasure and pain, the wise go to that immutable goal. The words are full of tremendous meaning, friends, that one has to get rid of that pride. Pride can be of various types. Here pride is not just the word in the worldly, normal sense. The word is used in a much spiritual sense which is more comprehensive. Normally we think of pride or bloated ego, that a person just harps upon that I am so and so and I did such great things and so forth, tries to show himself or herself bigger than others, more important and superior to others. That is normally spoken of as a person being egotistic or proud. Of course, that is to be given up. But even there is the sense of I am so and so, I am this body, I am this particular mind, these are my likes, these are my dislikes, and so forth. Those ideas that we get caught in, they also are to be given up. That is the ego. I am so and so. And we take pride in it unconsciously. Like we take pride, we have been taught, okay, don't say that I am superior to you. We take pride in the fact that, you know, I don't consider myself superior to anybody. You won't find many like me. I am the one who says that I am not superior to anyone. You see, that can generate an idea of pride. I told you that incident. One of our senior swamis was telling us that how deep-rooted could be this idea of I am so and so, how the pride can take you by the throat even in the minor things. And he told his idea that, look, those days we were the novices, and as the novices we used to have a little tuft of hair. In Bengali it gets called tiki. In Sanskrit the word is shikha, that a little tuft of hair used to be on the head. All other head shaved, but a little tuft here. He said, well, now you are novices entering into a monastic life, getting ready to enter into monastic life. You may think that, well, I have renounced everything. I am not taking pride in all my education and all these university degrees that I have achieved. I am not talking about anymore about my family background, that how my parents and my grandparents and all my clan, how great it is. You are not referring to it. You have cut all those things. You do not have any money to be proud of. Excellent. But whatever little you have, the whole pride will go onto it. It used to get divided earlier in my money, my house, my family, my learning, my capabilities. Now, all those things you have consciously given up. Now the pride could sit, go and sit on that little tuft of hair. And you may think, hey, how nice is my little tuft of hair. Nobody else has like this. Mine is the best amongst everyone here. So, amongst all people here, my tuft of hair is the best one. That's how the pride will go. So, go on that one thing. So, therefore, one should be very cautious about this thing, that no sense of limitation through the gate of pride would enter in our awareness. And all the pitfalls of attachment, they also are needed to be, you know, be cautious about. Then adhyatma nitya, that it is the spiritual awareness needs to be kept up all 24 hours. It is not something that is to be done only for a little time. Our idea of spiritual practice sometimes comes to this, that I will do it, say, 1 hour. Maybe if it is too much, maybe 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. But then I will not be concerned about it in the meantime. But friends, you may be engaged in a particular spiritual practice for a couple of hours, but the underlying current of that awareness has to remain there throughout. Otherwise, other Swami used to say, well, if you want to go somewhere, and then if you are going 2 hours in a day in the forward direction and remaining 22 hours in the backward direction, then you are not likely to make much progress towards the goal. So, we have to keep this awareness, adhyatma nitya, the idea that I have to achieve that goal. Constantly that remembrance of our goal has to be there. Like somebody on a very important mission, whatever the other things that person may be doing, that person is eating something, that person is, you know, talking to people, when the mailman comes, that fellow opens the door and all that, has maybe some exercises and so forth. But yet, the awareness or the thoughts are all really focused on that big mission. And like that, we should all the time remember this great goal in our life. Vinivritta kamaha, the desires have to be given up. There is no particularly good desire as such. Only one desire is very good, that should be kept up, and that is to give up all desires. Sometimes this question is asked to Sri Ramakrishna, that what about desire to realize God? Is that also to be given up? He said, no, no, not that desire. That is our true desire. That is not to be given up. All these which appear as desires but not really the desires at all. Because even if we get them, we don't get rid of our frustration. And therefore, that true desire, that which is really not desire at all, in that sense, because of the lack of a better word, we say desire. It is because it is really desire to give up all desires. So, then we will end up in a kind of, you know, circular argument. Well, then desire to give up desire, is it a desire? That is the famous those paradoxes in logic will appear there. It is really the fallacies in language. So that desire is to be kept up, all other desires are to be given up. And then one important thing that is told here, dvandvair vimukta sukha dukkha sanjnyai. A very important, psychologically, I would say, the most important thing, where we have our concerns in the whole life is pleasures and pains. But this person looks upon the pleasures and pain as something that follows each other anyway. You don't pay much attention to it. Go ahead. Move towards your goal. Like when you are driving, there will be some view on you through your one side, some other view on the other side. You look at them, but you keep on your path. You do not pay much attention to it. You pay attention to your advancement. So pleasures and pains, they are part of life. I told you the great story of Prahlada. And what a wonderful logic. This little child is devoted to God. And that devotion, sometimes we think of devotion that there is no thinking in it. But not so, actually. Devotion is outcome or involves, let us say, a deep thought too. This little kid is full of devotion to God. Not at all common for let alone a child, but even a grown-up person. He tells his other friends, look, that which comes to us automatically, isn't it foolish to put in efforts in doing it? I gave you the example, suppose you are in a flight, the flight is taking you somewhere, say from here to Frankfurt, and you think that you should reach early, and so if you start running in the plane, does it help? It is unnecessary. Maybe it can give you some comfort of doing some exercise, but it will not hasten your journey at all. It is useless to run when you are automatically going to get there. Your running is not going to add anything to it at all. So also, friends, what a great statement this little child made. When I first read it, it was such an illumination. He said, by virtue of having a body, everyone has to get pleasures and pains automatically. If you have body, you will have pleasures and you will have pains too. There is absolutely no escape from this. So why spend efforts in something that you are going to get automatically? Isn't it stupid? Height of foolishness that what you are anyway going to get, why put in efforts in that? There was the story of an illiterate farmer. He used to listen to news and all that, didn't understand much everything in the world. So he built a house and didn't put a ceiling, just the four walls, nothing else, no roof, no ceiling. And when somebody asked him, hey, what, how can you stay in that kind of house? And he said, I heard that government is putting a ceiling on the property in these areas. So on the government is putting a ceiling on it. So why should I take trouble of putting ceiling myself? So he didn't get this idea. Ceiling means that the total number of plots or the property you own, that is called ceiling in the legal terms or in the administrative. He thought that, well, this ceiling, some government will be paying for it, will be putting the ceiling under that roof and all that. So if that is going to be done by automatically, why should I spend in putting the ceiling myself if government is going to do it? So similarly, friends, this is for sure, that by virtue of, just by virtue of having body, you will have your share of pain and pleasures. So don't put in any effort in that direction. What is going to be, your efforts are required in getting rid of this ignorance, that this world and everything around is real. Put in efforts in getting detached from that and develop attachment to the truth, to God. So that is what is told here, that sukha-dukha sanyai dvandavai vimuktaha, that becoming free from all this dual throng called pleasure and pain. See how much stranglehold that these ideas of pleasure and pain actually have on our psyche. This is not theoretical, friends. Spiritual life is not understanding the truth. It is not just logic, but it is psychologic. That see how the different strings bind us in life. It is this, that pleasure and pain. Wherever there is scope for pleasure, the mind gets attached to it. Wherever you see the possibility of pain, the mind will try to run away from that. So, thus, what will happen? We will lose the focus of the journey, the goal of the journey. And therefore, we have to see that we remain neutral to those. Well, pleasures will come. Okay, let them come, part of our having a body. Pains will come, have this body, pains will be there. That if you, I went to a car mechanic long back in India, that well, this car needs all this fixing and this and that, can you not have something better? He said, well, if you have car, it will have the problems. You will have to fix them, get rid of the car, and all those worries will be gone. It is not possible. One doctor in our dispensary told a lady, she used to always come and complain about the aches and pains and such things. She was well past middle age. So, the doctor told her a few times, well, you know, it's a matter of aging, and take this medication, you will get some relief. But that used to come again and again. So she demanded one day from the doctor, I was sitting just by the side doing the registration work and so forth. And so she demanded that she should give me some medication that will cure me permanently. I hate to come again and again with all these difficulty in walking due to my these arthritic knees and so forth. So the doctor, he has already told many times, so now he decided to tell another medication. There was a railway line that was passing very close by where we used to sit doing this medical work in that rural area. So he said, well, you know, go and stand there. Whenever you see a train about to pass, just throw yourself on the rails, and after a few minutes all your pains will be gone. So she of course understood the joke in it. Well, not that and so forth, but the idea is, if you are carrying this vehicle of body, it will have its problems. It will have, you know, like you say that this vehicle is too old, cannot be repaired, more difficult to repair it, and so forth. What do? You say, bye-bye, enough. Let me get a new one. So this body also, friends, is like that. When it is difficult to keep it going on, if it is not doing any good, difficult to be in that body, it is just maintenance, then no need to keep it, go beyond that. So this understanding is that pleasures and pains, there is no cessation of pains and no continuous pleasures. It is the pleasures and pains are part of it. Even right from childhood you can see this. Was there any time absolutely no pain for 2 years? You cannot have a life like that. It is it will be there. So don't waste your energies. The idea is don't pay attention to those. Focus on the truth, the divine. And then the next verse describes very beautifully. Again, similar idea is very beautifully described in Kathopanishad. Natad bhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakah yad gatva na nivartante taddham paramam mama. The sun does not illuminate, nor the moon, nor the fire. That is my supreme state, reaching which they do not return. A very important message. The transcendental and supreme nature of reality is very beautifully, very powerfully presented here in the most sublime words. Tad bhasayate suryo. No other light can illuminate. No other light can illuminate. This is to ward off the idea that someday science will discover this. Science means the physical science, science of the five sense organs. Well, friends, the light of these five organs and the intellect and the mind, it does not illumine that reality, because all these things are really having their own light from that source. Now, you don't need to hold a candle to look at the sun, you see. How can a candle illumine the sun? It's not possible. So our eyes and our ears and our five organs, our mind, our intellect, it is all secondarily illumined by that reality, and therefore don't expect that one day we will understand all the secrets of the universe through our analytical methods. It is, nothing can be farther from truth. If we analyze enough, if we analyze in fact even a little bit, this truth can be apparent, very clear to us, that there is no way that you can reach there through intellect. Somebody told me that, and it's a very beautiful statement, that the most intelligent person is that who understands the limitations of intelligence. That like you need to know the limitations of the travel by car. You can travel by car, say, on the land, but then when you there is the ocean, how can you go on the ocean by your car? You have to then get another equipment, another vehicle that will be able to run on water or can fly over it, so and so forth. You won't say that my car is so nice, you know, it is Mercedes, and then, so can I go on Mars with it? No, it is all right here, but you can't go on Mars by that vehicle. So similarly, our intellect has some intrinsic limitations. It has its own domain on which it becomes applicable. Trying to use it beyond that domain is the sign of not having intelligence at all. So therefore, this idea is to be remembered, that this our little secondary lights will not be able to illumine that. And that illumined, everything else gets secondarily illumined by that. So this idea is to be engraved on our awareness, that all the other things, other means of knowledge, they fall short of it. You will find this idea in all Upanishads. Every Vedanta scripture will have this idea like Kathopanishad says so beautifully, that paranchikhani vyatrunat swayambhu tasmat paran pasyati nantaratman, that these sense organs that we have, they have been already confined and mutilated to see just the outer things and not the self. Do they ever see self? No. It is only the outer shapes, outer things that they see. Nothing more than that. And therefore, if somebody is desirous of discovering the self, if somebody wants to know the self, what does that person do? Kaschid dhiraha pratyagatmanam aishat avritta chakshu amritatvam ichchan. It is a very beautiful, sublime poetry, friends, that says that, look, pratyagatmanam aishat, the one who is desirous of realizing the true self, therefore stops going out through these senses, covers it. It requires, you know, therefore that person is called intelligent. Intelligent person. We don't have that intelligence. Did I tell you the story of that Sufi saint Rabia? A very illuminating story. Sometimes it is told the same story in the context of some other saints also. She used to do spiritual practices. There was another companion there. And then one day that companion said that, well, I am feeling terribly bored. Let me go a dance and music show there to get some happiness. And then he went there. When he returned, then he saw Rabia looking for some earring in the courtyard. She was looking for an earring. And he said, what happened? He said, well, that earring I am looking for. Let me also join you. Four eyes will be better than two. So he also started looking for the ring. They both spent a couple of hours in trying to find it. And after scanning the whole courtyard, this friend had the doubt and asked Rabia, are you sure you dropped it here? And this lady with the face, stony face, says, no, I have kept it in a box inside the house. You fool! Why did you then make me look for it in the courtyard? Have you lost your brain? What is this? And she calmly asked him, had you kept your happiness in that dance show there, that you went to get it from there? Had you kept your happiness there, that now you went all the way to get it from there? If you could get happiness from there, then why should I not get my earring from where it is not? This is a very important idea, friends, that let us not foolishly look for happiness which is intrinsic to us. You can never get even an iota of happiness from anything apart from you. I don't know how can this thing become clear to us. And when it becomes clear to us, well, that the search then goes in the right direction. So it is told therefore here that when you know that, you then reach, go towards that supreme goal, your true self, And when you get it, all your search, all that you were looking for, comes to a fulfilling halt. You have reached the home. You have, now the journey is over. Now you don't have to go through the cycles of birth and death again, because what you were looking for has been found. The life reaches to a fulfilling, ultimate destination. And therefore it says that yad gatva na nivartante taddham paramam mama. That is where you find your true home. Dham means home. Beautiful Sanskrit word. That where you feel relaxed. Suppose you are gone somewhere as a guest or for some work. You are staying there and then for some time here, there. Then when you, after a few days, go back to your home. The feeling of home is a funny thing. It is very difficult to explain. When you have that feeling of home about some place, then you feel relaxed. Yeah, now I don't have to worry about. I am at home. So the sense of relaxation. When a lady was, she told when she was here, nice. Then she was going somewhere else. And then after travel of to various places, after about 2-3 weeks, she goes back to home and then she calls me. So I said, how you feel? Well, fine. Now I feel relaxed. Now today, finally, after many days, I will get to sleep in my own bed. Friends, here we are strangers on the earth. We don't have our true home here. That is why there is always the worries, always tension, always finding for something. But when you get to your true home, the ultimate home, then a sense of complete peace, relaxation, restfulness. That is why that is home. So, Lord or our true self is our true home. If we don't get there, then as Shankara describes in that inimitable hymn of his, that punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jatare shayanam, iha samsare khalu dustare kripaya pare pahi murare. Well, otherwise, again and again taking birth, again and again going through all this cycle, again and again just being kicked around. So there is no escape except Lord, my true self. That is the only escape, friends. So let us remember this. The Lord will be telling now the process, a very beautiful part of this chapter begins now, that how we move around like this. What is the connection of I to my body? A very beautiful idea, friends. That how I and my eyes are connected. I used to get that question many times. That how these are called my eyes and not those eyes. How I and this body are tied together and so forth, you know. So that question will be discussed, but we don't have time today, and we will try to discuss those ideas. A very beautiful, very poetic, and yet a very analytical as well as psychoanalytical description we will see here. Any questions about today's discussion? Okay, see, I must have explained everything very nicely, so no questions. Let us conclude with the closing prayers. Let me remind you, tomorrow there is a music concert in the evening, apart from the programs during the day, like there will be the voluntary work for cleaning and all that, and then guided meditation from and prayers from 11 to 12 o'clock. So, but these are the regular programs. A special program is music concert, sitar and tabla. So you are invited to join that too. Gita sugita kartavya kimanyat shastra vistarehi ya swayam padmanabhasya mukha padmadvinasrita ekam shastram devaki putra gitam eko devo devaki putra eva eko mantrah tasya namaniyani karmapyekam tasya devasya seva shri krishna arpanamastu.